I've entitled this message, Serving the Church. We as members of a body, the body of Christ, have certain responsibilities that we're supposed to fulfill. Over the course of years since I started serving the church, I've done so in many capacities, from beginning to setting up tables, cleaning toilets, sweeping floors, you name it, I did it. And things just kept going from there, and I was chosen to do other things during the course of my service to the church. Now, having said that, that's where my beginning was, okay? We're going to elect a council, and this council is going to serve you and I, and it's going to serve you in that it will do things that I was supposed to be doing here in the last few years that it didn't get done. I fully know it didn't get done. Sometimes in the course of service, we have to be told when we have too much on our shoulders. And I appreciate people loving me enough to realize when I couldn't. You've always heard the old adage, you can't see the forest for the trees. And I couldn't see where all of my failures were. And believe me, they were failures of omittance when I should have been doing something I wasn't. So it happens, and we look in the book of Numbers, the 10th chapter. I want to begin reading about Moses and his service to the church in the wilderness. Numbers 11th chapter, keeping in mind now that we're going to be doing something similar to what he had to do. And that is turn over some of the responsibilities that he had placed on his shoulders over to others who were capable of doing likewise. In Numbers 11th chapter, it says, in the beginning of this, the caption says, the murmurings begin. Not that we're like those Israelites would ever murmur, but he had a problem with them because they didn't have enough water. They didn't have enough food. They didn't have the right kind of food. They wandered around. It was dusty and it was hot and it was dirty. And Moses was at his wit's end, as we say. So in Numbers 11 chapter, he begins to refer to some of the things that he was responsible for. I'm going to break into the content here. Numbers 11 verse 10. Then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. It was a situation where the people were just not satisfied with the lot through the wilderness. I think their concept of going from Egypt to the wilderness was a straight path. And far be it from God to put them in a straight path, but he made them have difficulties. He tested them time and time again. I won't belabor it because you know we've read all of those scriptures in the Old Testament where God tested them time and time again and saying, how long will you not obey my word? And so I don't want to get into that, but this is a situation where Moses himself found himself displeased. And Moses said unto the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted your servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in your sight, that you lay the burden of all this people on me? Now, this was a situation here where the burden was laid on Moses. He was given the responsibility to lead the people out of Egypt, to lead them through the wilderness, to talk to them through his brother Aaron, because Moses made the excuse, well, I'm slow of speech. I'm not eloquent or whatever. But God says, hey, you know, that's a little thing. I can take care of it. Your brother will speak for you. So here he is. He's taking on this burden that God has given him. And let's see, I want to go to verse 13. When should I have flesh to give unto all this people? Because they were eating manna. They were eating that coriander seed, that bread that God had rained from heaven. And they were to collect it on 6 days. And on the seventh day, they were supposed to rest. And the sixth day, they were supposed to collect twice as much as they did on the other days, and it was to be carried over through the Sabbath. It was not going to spoil. And so, of course, some did and many didn't. But anyway, here's the deal. When should I give flesh unto all this people? For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. He says, I am not able to bear all this people alone because it's too heavy for me. Now, this is a situation where Moses himself came to the conclusion that he couldn't handle all the responsibilities that God was giving him. He realized that it was just too great. It was more than he could bear. So in I always get amused when I read verse 15. Now here's all this burden laid on Moses. God put it upon him. And in verse 15 he says, and if you deal thus with me, kill me. It's a situation where he says, man, I just can't handle this. God in the New Testament, he tells us he'll never put on us any more than we can bear up. But I don't think he told Moses that. And Moses is finding himself in a spot where he just cannot function to all the responsibilities that God has given him. He says, just go ahead and kill me. I pray thee out of hand if I have found favor in your sight, and let me not see my wretchedness. So, Moses himself was complaining. He had become exhausted and irritable by the responsibilities laid on him by God. Now, over in the book of Exodus, the 18th chapter, Exodus 18th chapter, I like to begin in verse 17. Now, this is where a situation like I have been in, where somebody else saw that I was no longer capable of doing the things that I'd been doing in the past. We just get older, we get tired, we get irresponsible, forgetful. If Neil's a wonderful person. When he tells me to do something, he has to send me an email because he knows I'm going to forget. And he's faithful to send me the email during the course of the week. Have you thought about telling the people that we're going to need the building Sunday, or we're going to need it for Passover, or whatever? I mean, he's really great about that, and I appreciate things people do for me because it helps to keep me on my toes. He says, Moses' father-in-law said to him, the thing that you do is not good. Now, he was doing a service for the church in the wilderness. Moses was serving the people, okay? But the thing that was not good was his father-in-law noticed that you take on too much. You're judging the people from morning till after dark. You're wearing yourself out. You need to spread out the responsibility where it can be actually done, and you're not wore out by it. He says, verse 18, you will surely wear away, both you and this people that is with thee. For this thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to perform it yourself alone. And when we get this council made up, that's going to be great. That's going to be good. I have faith in this council that's going to be different than the other council we had. So he says, now hearken unto me, my voice, and I will give you counsel. And God shall be with you. Be thou for the people to Godward, that you may bring the causes unto God. So Moses was sitting in a judgment seat, okay? He was a judge, all right? And his father-in-law says, there's other ways of going about this where you don't have to do it all. He says, verse 20, and you shall teach them ordinances and laws, and shall show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. So he was going to, in the capacity of a pastor, if you will, or an elder, he was going to teach them the things that they should know, the law, and the way that they should walk, that they should walk after God and not themselves. So it's much like the New Testament when you see in the book of Acts where some of the widows in the church were not being administered to. And some of those of the apostles said, it's not fit for us to leave the service of the church spiritually and go wait on tables, serve tables. So they elected deacons, men that would go and do the service to all the widows that were being fed and taken care of during the course of a week in the church. So the burden was too much for the ministry, so they decided that we'll have deacons, the diaconate, those that serve. And it worked well for the church. In verse 21, he says, you shall provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, and rulers of hundreds, and rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. So it got down to the point where, you know, they sectioned it off with these leaders or heads of families, if you will, even down to 10. One might be over 10, one of 50 or whatever, depending on their ability. Okay? And it was a way to service the church in the wilderness and not place too much of a burden on Moses himself. So, verse 22 says, "And let them judge the people in all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto you, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for yourself, and they shall bear the burden with thee." And that's the good part. They shall bear the burden with you. In verse 23, "If you shall do this thing, and God command you so, then you shall be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace." You know, the ones chosen were supposed to provide peace among the church in the wilderness. They were supposed to take the issues that were smaller in nature, like physical issues, what time we have services, when do we meet for Passover, those sort of things. Who prepares the place for Passover service? And those sort of things. Those sort of things. And here he's saying, let them judge the smaller matters and you the greater matters. One of the things I've been doing more in this past few months than I have in all my ministry is counseling with people. And the less I have to think about something else, the more I'll be able to actually give someone some good counsel and not just throw some words at it, but actually allow them to tell me and let it sink in and then allow God to tell me what to tell them. It's a great responsibility to counsel with people because you're dealing with their heart. You're dealing with their mind, their problems, their shortcomings or whatever it may be. You're counseling for baptism or you're counseling for marriage. All of these things are part of the minister's duties and responsibilities. And the less he has to worry about the other things, the more he can put into these matters that Moses undertook. In Deuteronomy, the first chapter, Deuteronomy 1, examines something else here in the book of Deuteronomy, the first chapter. And I want to begin in verse 9. "And I spake unto you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear you myself alone. The Lord your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are this day as the stars of heaven for multitude." You remember the promise he gave to Abraham? "Your seed shall spread and cover the whole earth. You shall be a multitude, so many that like the sands of the sea, you won't be able to count them." And of course, with more people comes more responsibility, more needs that have to be met. And here we find that Moses is saying that the Lord God of your fathers make you 1,000 times so many more as you are and bless you as he has promised you. So the growth was coming. And anytime you have a growth in a church, whether it be in the wilderness or here or wherever, there is more responsibility, things that need to be done, people to be serviced. He says, "How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance and your burden and your strife?" Because when people get together, sooner or later, strife settles in. It's just inevitable. We have personality clashes, or we have issues with each other, or we think of it, we've been slighted, or some sort of thing has brought us, you know, to a point of strife. And here it is that he's talking about that strife because they're growing. It's going to be more. He says, verse 13, "Take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I will make them rulers over you. And you answered me and said, this thing which thou hast spoken is good for us to do." So this counsel is going to be good for us to do. It's going to be a time when we can take any issues, anything needs to be done, the services to the church before the council. Over in the book of Proverbs, the man of wisdom, Solomon, has a lot to say in the Proverbs about this idea of sharing or dividing responsibility. In Proverbs 1, I want to read just one verse, verse 5. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. Now, over the course of years, I've functioned without quote-unquote deacons. I mean, but I have not been without counsel. Those that have been in the church a long time, I will ask them something, whether it be Neil or Marvin or Richard or whoever. I will ask them because I need to know what their counsel is. I can remember at the Feast of Tabernacles one year, I went to ask counsel of all the ministry there, something pertaining to one of the members of this church here, something that he used to do for a living. And in a worldwide church, God, he was told to stop because it had something to do with magic. You probably know I'm talking about John Solomon. I know he wouldn't mind me telling this. But he went to schools all over the four states area. I mean, he had bookings everywhere. And Miss Nancy was a straight... What was that? Burns and Allen, was it? Where one was a straight person, one was a... Well, that's what her responsibility was, to stand up there and sound like she didn't know what she's talking about. And they had a great show. It was wonderful. People loved it. Schools booked it in advance. And he had bookings months and months and months in advance. And the worldwide Church of God found out about it, and they said, you've got to stop this. And I think that's when he left the church. Because he had bookings and responsibilities months in advance. And he wasn't doing quote-unquote magic. He was doing sleight of hand. My uncle used to do that when my brother and I were just little kids. I never forget how amazed I was that he could take a glass of water, put it on the table, and cover it with some newspaper, and when he pulled it away, there was no glass of water. Now, I think I figured out how he did that. I think he opened up the, what do you call it, those things in to make the bigger or smaller, the... Leaf, yeah. I think he opened up the, you know, unbeknownst to us because we're watching his hands, we're watching that newspaper, and I think he opened it up and slipped his hand up underneath there and pulled the glass down and probably put it between his legs. Now, that's what I believe, but it's just sleight of hand. It is entertaining. It's fun. Children love it. I can remember in school when clowns used to come around and we all was ready to go. I mean, just... You know, we would just love to see what they were doing, magic and being funny also. So, I've asked counsel of many people during the course of my ministry because I knew that it was necessary. One person can't be an island and make all the decisions. They can't make all of the choices. They can't do these things that should be shared. And so that's the reason that I've asked for people's counsel. And then we go to Proverbs 22, still in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs was Maggie Sharp's favorite book. The reason it was is because she was a woman of wisdom, and she got a lot of it out of the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, beginning in verse 17, it says here, "Bow down thine ear, and hear the words of the wise, and apply your heart unto knowledge." There's people in this church that have as much or more wisdom than I do. They've been in the church longer. They've been around the truth longer. Mr. Payne, Mr. Davis, and others have been in this church longer than I have. Probably you've been associated with the church probably longer than I have, Mr. Bill. So there's those that have been in it longer, and to refuse their counsel or their wisdom is nothing short of ignorant and stupid. To shove that aside and make all the decisions for the church is just not conducive to a healthy church. He says, verse 18, "For it is a pleasant thing if you keep them within you, they shall withal be fitted in your lips. That thy trust may be in the Lord, I have made known to thee this day, even to thee. Have I not written to thee excellent things in counsels and knowledge?" I've often noticed that in the Church of God, we're told in the New Testament that The older women in the church should teach the younger how to be chaste and how to be modest, and the things that, that becomes a woman of some purity, of some clarity about what her role is in the church and her role in the family. And that's the one thing that I've never seen exercised that much. Now, it may have been exercised and I didn't know it, but for the most part, I don't believe I've seen that in the church where younger goes to older, whether it be men or women. But it's a thing that should be done because women of age have this, been there, done that. Your children. Why do you tell them sometimes that they shouldn't do this or do that or be involved in this or be involved with that person? Why do you tell them that? Been there and done that. You learn things sometimes just through trial and error. But you have that wisdom stored up, which tells you, I don't want to do this any longer because the result was not what I wanted. It's just older people get wiser. You know, when you're young, you think, well, you know, hey, these old people, they're not hip. They don't have it. You know, they're not down. They just don't know. They can't relate. We've been there and done that. We can relate. The issues with our youth are not any different than the issues we had when we were growing up, except certain things are more prolific. Promiscuity, drugs, those things are more prolific. They're not new. There's nothing new under the sun, but they are certainly worse today, and our children are suffering for it. But verse 20 again, have I not written to thee excellent things, counsels and knowledge, that I might make thee to know the certainty of the words of truth? Words of truth, other people who you counsel with. Counsels of wisdom, that you might answer the words of truth to them that send unto you. People want to know things. They want to ask you things. And certainly any of us can answer, at least to a certain extent, some of the questions and issues that people have in the church. Certainly those that have been involved in certain lifestyles can tell you that I can tell you where you're headed. And it's not pretty. If somebody's been a drug addict and they've overcome that, they can tell you this is where it will lead you. Speaking from experience, speaking from the wisdom of age in going through these things themselves. Proverbs 11, verse 14. Proverbs 11, verse 14. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. We've already read where when there's a multitude of counselors, there's peace. And also, when there's a multitude of counselors, there is safety because you see things differently through the eyes of others. Others can share with you part of their wisdom that you're not thinking about. They can see it from a different perception, or they can see where there might be things that you're planning to do that might cause disruption or problems among brethren. I mean, it happens. So there's safety in that multitude of counselors because you get a broader view of how to function in the capacity that you function in, whatever it may be. And each and every one of us are should be servicing the church however we can, however God has given us the grace to do so. Chapter 12, verse 20. Notice what it says. Deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil, but to counselors of peace is joy. You know, there's two kinds of deception. You can be deceived or you can deceive yourself. I believe that at least every week we should look at our motives for the things that we've done during the past week. Look at our motives. Are they right? Are they pure? Are they pleasing to God? Will they bring a service to family, friends, work, church? We can be self-deceived. And certainly that, to me, is a double insult. To be deceived by others is something else. Until you prove that they have deceived you, you don't know it. But the double insult is to deceive yourself into thinking that you're doing something for the right motives when you aren't. It's also an insult to God, because He says a multitude of counselors, there's peace and there's safety. And we must always remember that. That's why we need the counsel, for safety and peace. Chapter 24, verse 5 and 6. Then we'll move along out of the book of Proverbs. But this book is so full of things that just lay a lot of wonderful knowledge to you. Wonderful wisdom and even inspiration. Chapter 24, verse 5, he says, a wise man is strong, yeah, a man of knowledge increases strength. Where is it in the Old Testament? In the Old Testament somewhere, I can't remember, I didn't look it up, I just now thought of it. There is it might be Ecclesiastes, but it talks about the strength of a rope. That makes sense? If you have a multitude, the hemp or whatever it is that makes the rope, don't you feel safer if you're going to have to climb it? I've always heard in church, you know, you don't want to go too far out on the limb. Or you wouldn't want to climb too far up the rope if it's not got enough strands on it. We help each other. I've been blessed enough to serve various churches in my ministry. But there's no church that's more dear to me than this church here. If nothing else, just because I'm with it more. I'm with you all more. I know you better because we've been around each other for years. And we still like each other. Imagine that. It can happen. You know, we work through the issues. We look past the slights, or we look past the injury, or we go to the person and we work those situations out. This is pleasing to God, because one of the things He really hates is sowing discord among the family. He hates that. And I, for one, never want to offend anyone without a cause, when it's not necessary. Because sometimes you have to tell people something that they're just not going to receive. they're not going to be happy about it. Yeah, you know, it happens. I know when you're counseling with your employers or your employees, they taught us as supervisors that you bring a person in if you have an issue and you lay on all the things he's doing positive or she's doing positive. Then you get down to the issue you want to talk about. But don't just lay it out there in the beginning and make them real defensive. They're feeling good about themselves. You know, hey, this guy likes me. He likes my work. He likes what I'm doing. You just want to point out the things that they've got right. And what you're doing is some constructive criticism. I've done that before, and people have taken issue with it. It's not the result I wanted. It's not the one I was looking for, but that's just the way it is. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it's just unavoidable. Verse 5, a wise man is strong, yeah, a man of knowledge increases strength. For by wise counsel you shall make your war, and in the multitude of counselors there's safety. Any issues you have, the number one source of counseling is God Almighty. If you take your issues before Him, or if you feel like that maybe you're self-deceived, or you're a little bit, your ego's inflated, or you're not wanting to do things for the right motives, talk to God, because He will help you to overcome unrighteous motives. You are His child, and He cares for you much more than we care for our own children. He is not going to leave us without right spiritual counseling. And He says, if you confess unto me your faults, your sins, I am faithful to forgive. And I suspect as we go along this week, that we'll be on our knees and we'll be saying, Father, forgive me of my sins and trespasses, for I also forgive others as against me. There's a tough one there. For I forgive others theirs against me. Oh, really? Hopefully we do. But I can look back on times when I didn't. In Nehemiah, the 13th chapter, I think pretty much everybody knows what Nehemiah's talking about here. He's talking about the burdens that people were bringing in. They were just having commerce back and forth on the Sabbath day. It was just a day just like any other day, and they were bringing in all these burdens, and they were buying and selling and wholesale trading and all of the things that are issues with the Sabbath. A Sabbath is not a day of work. It's not a day of requiring work from your servants. Nor is it not a time to require your animals to work. Animals are physical too. Animals have to have rest. Now, the work that they do during the 6 days of the week helps them to be strong, keeps them healthy. But you don't wear them out. You let them rest, just like you do the land every seventh year. And then every 49th and 50th year, was it? Yeah, Jubilee year. So these are issues that that were needing to be dealt with by Nehemiah. And I always laugh, I always get amused at one of the, you know, if you people don't stop this, because what he did, he was governor of that city or head, whatever, okay? And he told him, you've got to get out of here. You can't be bringing these burdens on the Sabbath day into the city. So they went outside the city gate and set up their little booths. They just changed geography, location. They didn't stop. The bad part was that what they were doing, wholesale trading and commerce on the Sabbath day. So he threatened, if they didn't stop it completely, to lay hands on them. And he didn't mean anoint them. You get my drift. He was angry. He was mad at them. They were doing something that he knew was wrong, and they were bringing it inside the city. And anytime you see this wholesale trade and commerce going on, if you're a businessman, you're wanting to get in on the action. It's like people today, they don't want to stop working on the Sabbath day because that's a big day. The Sabbath day is a big day. But Becky Cottingham could tell you that your business can survive without working on the Sabbath, because she had that barbecue place there in Atlanta, Texas, and it was funny. She had this sign with a big circle like this and the line through it that says, it said, that sign like that, and then underneath it, pork. It means no pork. And if you're looking for pork, you need to go someplace else. She kept the laws inside of her business. She served no pork. She cooked no pork. She sold no pork. And when the Sabbath came, the business was closed. And it survived. It can happen. And so here in Nehemiah, I'm not going to read in the book of Nehemiah what I think. Well, I'll read verse 15. It says, the 12th chapter, Nehemiah 13, and verse 15. In those days saw I in Judah some treading the wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves and laden asses, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold their victuals. And verse 19 says, and it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut, and charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set I at the gates, that there should be no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. You know, this primarily is speaking about physical burdens. But I looked the word up in the Hebrew, and it also can mean mental. Now, I'm sure that in the course of your life in the church that you've probably brought some mental burdens in on the Sabbath. It's going to happen. There's going to be issues at work or in your family, or there's going to be issues that come up. There's going to be problems with finances or transportation, just a whole plethora of things that can cause you to be worrying about it and bringing that burden in on the Sabbath day. Hopefully by the time you leave, though, that burden has been lifted. Hopefully. It may not always be. But here Nehemiah has an answer. As later on he says, I'm going to lay hands on them. He had the ability to do that. In Matthew, the 23rd chapter, I'm not going to read it, but it's talking about the scribes and Pharisees who laid burdens on people, making the Sabbath day a dread, not making it a delight, a time of joy, a time of peace and comfort and consolation, but a time when they were afraid to look up. The Sabbath was not a joy. They had these police inside the church that would watch you, just like they watched Christ. Every move he made, they wanted to catch him breaking the law. Why do you heal on the Sabbath day? Why do your disciples gather a grain on the Sabbath? They're hungry. They were looking for ways to trap our Savior, Jesus Christ. Galatians, the 6th chapter. Probably quote this for me. Galatians 6th chapter and verse 1 says, Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore. He's talking about repair them. You know, if a person keeps church at home, he's denying himself or herself the ability to be restored. They're leaning on their counsel alone. They are not acting with their fellow brothers and sisters. So the iron's not sharpening the iron. Everything that they have, pretty much decisions they make, is from their own mind. That's dangerous. That's dangerous. Our forefathers realize that if you have a president with too much power, trouble. That's why they created Congress and a balance of power. And that's why they created the Supreme Court. Now, all of those things are deteriorating. But they did that to keep the balance of power where no one man had too much power. And it worked once if they followed it. So he says, you can restore such one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted like they are. We need to consider each other restoration. And after this council gets to work, I'm going to start restoration. Not that I've been doing a lot lately, just that I won't have to think about a lot of things that I was doing. I kid about that because, you know, with my wife, she cannot walk in a store. She cannot do it. And my daughter and her husband could not drive. They could not take care of their own personal business. They could not pay their bills. They could not buy their groceries. They could not go and buy their clothes. So I was doing that for them and my wife and myself, working, and then church. And after I retired, I wondered how I ever did it. Especially now when you go to the doctor 3 or 4 times a week. I wondered how I got it done. And I realized, well, my job allowed me to take off the job site and go take care of personal business. It was safe for me to do so because my supervisors were doing just like me. So they couldn't point a finger. Okay? That's how I did it. Otherwise, I couldn't have. But it says, verse 2, bear you one another's burden, so fulfill the law of Christ. What does the law? What did Christ fulfill? His greatest act was submission to his Father. He loved us enough to keep us on his mind so that he didn't waver. Even after he was tempted by Satan himself, he always kept his eyes focused on the things that his Father told him to do here on earth. Save his children. He never wondered. He had a set of blinders on so that he could stray out of the path that his Father had set for him. Verse 5 says, for every man shall bear his own burden. But sometimes the burdens get too heavy and you need assistance. I'm going to conclude now with Hebrews, the 12th chapter. Hebrews 12. Verse 1, he says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight, every encumbrance, every distraction." Okay? "And the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that's set before us." We're not running a sprint. We're running a marathon. And we're going to need to lean on each other and help each other and bear one another's burdens from time to time. It's just simple as that. You just can't do it all on your own. But he says, "With patience the race is set before you, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame." That's why I don't wear a crucifix, as they call them. There's none in my house. But see, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. "For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds." And you know, there's various ways that a man or a woman can be wearied. And some of them is the fact that he's just taking on too much. He's not able to fulfill his responsibilities anymore. I hope I never get to the point where I can't fulfill my responsibilities as a pastor. But I'm kind of looking forward to not fulfilling some of those other responsibilities that I used to do. Looking forward to it. We're going to have a great council. God will provide.